live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island. It's Cofield and Company.
It's Friday, gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Partying.
Yeah, all right, here we go. 5 o'clock. Fun. Friday. Willie Ramirez is here. Treasure Island is where we're at. Golden Circle Sports Bar. We're watching college football. Syracuse up 21-0. Check that, 21-3. Laying 37.5. Early second against Colgate. Houston Cougars out to a 3-0 lead on Colorado. 5 minutes left in the first quarter there. So we're going to go over to Radio Row here in a second with Arash Markazi. Apparently, I missed a very important phone call last night. How, Willie, you were trying to notify me about something?
I was going to let you in on the digs and fill you in about a team dinner organized by one Arash Markazi. There were a couple of fun takes from it.
Is Arash with us?
Yes.
Arash, what did I miss last night? I didn't pick up the phone. Willie chose not to text me. He knows that's the main – actually, my phone was jacked up last night. But anyway, what did I miss last night?
Listen, I mean, it was a great time had by all. We had Steve Karp was there. Obviously, Willie was there. Will Despert, the intern. So great. But, you know, listen, I had a retell for the group. The story of Willie taking me to an Italian restaurant that was closed.
Sure.
And the chef comes out and he says, Mr. Willie, anything you want, we will, you know. And then, of course, Willie, which is your favorite part, has to order the cheese bread, which, you know, he had.
Where's the bread?
Yeah, he certainly was not in position to make it, but he made it happen.
Here was my favorite part from last night, Steve, and you could see me obviously on our stream right now, right? So I'm planning a little SoCal business trip with our Sporting Tribune publisher, okay? He was like, oh, no, don't worry about it. I've made the call. We're going to get it, da-da-da-da. So he says, just get me the date. So I'm at the table, and I look up the dates. I said, okay, here's the rundown. Nebraska volleyball's at UCLA on this date. USC, South Carolina women's basketball on this date. USC Nebraska volleyball on this date. So what I could do is I could stay. Now look at me, Steve. I say, now what I could do is I could stay the two nights where you get me set up, and then if I can on the third day. And Ross goes, yeah, every time I say something, he goes, yeah, yeah, no problem. I said, now on the third day, if I could just leave my bags at your place, immediately he goes, no.
That's not happening.
Yeah, that's not, you know, you can't come over. I was immediately shut down from the beach house.
you can visit, but you're not leaving anything there or staying, unfortunately. Sorry.
Well, I just meant leave the bag. Check out from where I'm staying. Leave the bags. Go to the volley.
Sorry.
But it was immediately shut down. You know, him and the wife both looked at me like I was. All of a sudden, I was, you know, Uncle Buck.
Arash, can we call in a favor to Team Luca? Maybe Willie could leave his bags inside of the gates, I'm assuming. I'm guessing that Luca going to Manhattan Beach. Whose house did he buy?
Maria Sharapova. You bought Maria Sharapova's house for $25 million.
Pales in comparison to Markazi, the Markazi
mansion. Yeah, the Chateau Markazi.
I saw some of the pictures that you guys had in the Sporting Tribune of Luca's new digs. Where exactly is that? Because it doesn't look like it's right next to the beach. It looks like it's up in the hills a little bit.
Yeah, it's in the hill section. And again, I mean, that's where most celebrities want to be. I mean, if you've been to Manhattan Beach, you have the Strand, which is right on the beach. But, you know, folks can kind of walk and see you at your home watching TV. So there's not a lot of privacy. So generally, celebrities like to be in the hill section. So, it's further up, but great views of the Pacific Ocean, beautiful sunset views. Players are staying in Manhattan Beach. Clayton Kershaw, Tyler Glasnow, a lot of the Dodgers are currently staying in Manhattan Beach. You know, 99% of the Kings currently live there. So yeah, like a lot is happening there right now.
There are now three go-to tourist spots where they want to go take a picture, and it's one will be Luca's, one will be the Markazi Mansion, and the other is the Beverly Hills 902 Beach House.
Oh, which is like right in front of me. So yes, exactly. That is awesome.
Yeah. So
Arash Markazi is with us. As Arash is in town to cover the fight, he is Mr. Vegas, Mr. LA. Arash, take people into the media circles. Where are you set up right now?
So we're at my favorite hotel, the Fontainebleau, here in Las Vegas. Joking, of course, but no, listen, they've done a nice job of accommodating the media. They only had a 2-day radio row. Basically, radio row is all done. If I make this comparison to Steve, he'll know what I'm talking about. But right now, it feels like Friday night at Super Bowl Radio Road, but yeah. Basically everyone's packed up and gone. But no, great setup here. A lot of folks were here yesterday. They had Triple H and The Undertaker. Josh Duhamel was here. So good weekend.
Yeah, I saw that they treated this. It looked a little, not bigger. I guess I will say it. It looked a little more star-studded than recent boxing Radio Rows. They really did it up by trying to bring guests in, and I know Dana White certainly did a lot of interviews because I saw a bunch of videos with him.
Yeah. You know, so what made this unique is, you know, in previous years, they've really not had a proper row. They've invited, I don't know, like a handful of stations in the same area where they have catering and the press conference. This is more of a proper setup, certainly nowhere near as big as Super Bowl, but a pretty good crew. Again, you have the All the Smoke podcast was here, Shannon Sharp, and Chad Ochocinco's podcast was here. You know, so a lot of Showtime, Netflix, but, you know, a good foray. Again, this is Netflix's first foray into live boxing outside of that Mike Tyson-Logan Paul fight. But, I think this was a good first attempt. And, again, we'll see how tomorrow night goes at Allegiant Stadium.
Give me the vibe on the fight in terms of the promotion, because obviously Canelo is not going to pitch a whole lot in English. Bud Crawford's very soft-spoken. What is the vibe about the fight? How is the fight? How are they selling the fight aside from, hey, it's, you know, two of the greatest in the world?
Yeah, I mean, they really kind of leaned on Dana White, the promoter. They really, anyone who's ever purchased a ticket or ever gotten anything from the UFC or the WWE has been bombarded by emails about this fight. So a lot of the promotion has really been to the fan bases of mixed martial arts, WWE. But again, if you're a fight fan, like this is a fight that you're obviously very intrigued by. You know Canelo, you know Bud Crawford. The unique thing here, Steve, though, unlike other pay-per-views, this is not a pay-per-view fight, right? This is live on Netflix. So if you have a Netflix account, and I don't know anyone on the planet who either doesn't have one or doesn't know someone else's that they can sign up to, you'll be able to watch this fight. This is not something where they have to really tell the guys to push and shove each other or say something in order for people to pay $79.99. This is a free fight on Netflix. So that's the big thing. I'm really going to be intrigued by how many million people tune in to this fight.
Arash, the other read I need is how many thousands of people, tens of thousands of people are going to go into Allegiant Stadium. What are you hearing about ticket sales?
It's a great question. I mean, they've been really secretive about that. I've not heard once the term sold out, so I don't think it'll be sold out. But whether they paper it, I would be shocked if it's not close to, you know, 60,000. And when I say that, you're going to get to a point where, like, they're going to be handing out tickets to folks to make it look like it's sold out. So, I mean, the good thing about Allegiant Stadium, obviously, it's a big stadium, but it's not as big as SoFi. It's not like 75,000 or something like that. Like, if they can get close to 60, that place will look full.
Willie?
Well, it's going to be certainly one of the biggest ever, regardless of sellout or not. What we do anticipate is it has the potential of being the biggest fight in history in terms of, you know, crowd and magnitude. I mean, rating right up there with, you know, some of the Mayweather fights, the De La Hoya fights, Julio Cesar Chavez, and then going back to the heavyweight division was very prominent. And then in the mid-80s with the Hagler, the Leonard, the Hearns, the Durans. I mean, it really is going to be, it's certainly going to be the biggest fight of this century. And it's going to rival some of the biggest fights that's ever taken place in this city. And it's going to be, what's the date tomorrow? It's the 13th, so 17 and 2. It's 19 days shy of 45 years after Holmes and Ali in the outdoor stadium at Caesar's Palace.
You know, the interesting thing that I'm intrigued by is I loved the intimacy of the MGM Grand Garden Arena. It was a loss of, kind of when we went to T-Mobile, but you know, you go back to those fights that I loved so much growing up, you know, whether it was Tyson Holyfield or even at the outdoor stadium at Caesars, it was so hard to get a ticket. So what is it going to be like at a 65,000-seat football stadium that's housed the Super Bowl? Is that going to take some of that away? And I don't think so, but I don't know the answer to that because, you know, whenever you had those fights at the MGM where people would spill in from the casino and spill back into the casino, like, there was something about that that made it really special and really unique.
Yep. Get in price on the secondary sites like the Hub. Upstairs is $268. So I'm curious if we see a dump in price tomorrow or if ticket brokers are just going to hold steady and then hope that people kind of freak out and will pay a higher number. It's always very intriguing at Allegiant. And obviously, there's never been a boxing match there. So I wonder what's going to happen tomorrow. And remember, it's a little bit of an earlier start to the card. It's not, you know, it's not hours and hours early because initially there were rumors it was going to be kind of an early afternoon fight. What do you think happens, Arash? Do you think people can get in tomorrow for $150?
I think the price dips. And I think, listen, I mean, you've never had a situation before where you can get in the door for less than $200 for a prize fight like this. Why? It goes back to the point that, you know, if this fight was at the MGM Grand Garden Arena or T-Mobile and it's less than 20,000, you know, you can't get in the door for less than 1K. This is going to be different. So will you have someone saying, listen, I've never gone to a big fight in Vegas before. And you know, you're at the Mandalay Bay or you're at the Luxor and you go on whatever, StubHub or you know, these sites and, you know, if the ticket's less than 200, which it will get to, I think it will drop below that. I think so. Yeah, I mean, I certainly would want to know what that felt like if I was a fan. And you know, but again, what makes it this different, I think, guys, is that you can easily watch this at home and you don't have to pay.
That's the key.
I think that's the difference, right? Where I think there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, I could pay $200 for a ticket, or I could just go home and for free watch it on Netflix.
Yeah, I mean, fight parties in Vegas. I mean, back in the day, you know, even before the MGM Grand was built, right? And it was the outdoor stadium at Caesars or Thomas and Mack, and then it eventually moved over. And Mandalay Bay's hosted some big ones too, but eventually the Grand Garden in the early 90s. You know, fight parties, it was the out-of-town crew that was coming in. You know, that's and the spillage from the casinos, as Arash said. People just saying, you know what, let's go to the fight. Or all of a sudden, someone hits a hot roll on the crap table and they're bringing their winnings down to the MGM Grand Garden and they're buying it, they're scalping a ticket. Whereas now, whether you're in town from wherever or you're a local, it's easy to throw a fight party, you know, rent a suite, throw a fight party. I mean, you figure if you got three guys that are in town at $250 a pop, you can take that $750, rent a suite, throw a fight party, order Netflix. You got, if you already have a Netflix subscription, and it's free because you're not paying the pay-per-view. So it's a lot easier. I think what you're going to get, though, is that drop in ticket price and tourists that could easily run over to Allegiant and pop in and see it. You know, and speaking of to the intimacy that Arash spoke of from back in the day, also, it's the same mindset where back then, I'd say 75% to 80%, even if it was outdoors, they were suited up. It was a big night out. Like, it was a special. It was like going to the shows back in the day when the headliners were doing 2 weeks at Caesars or MGM, the original MGM, on which is now the Horseshoe, or the Dunes. You know, headliners were there for 2 weeks. You got suited up for a show. You didn't just throw some cargo shorts on and some Huarache sandals. Same was for the fights. I mean, now you're walking around like, hey, let's go to the fight, see if we can scalp it. And you're in, you know, flip-flops and shorts, and you're going to run over to Allegiant. So different mindset, different mentality. I think they'll draw the crowd. I just don't know if they'll sell out.
Yeah.
My guess is that it'll be close to a sellout. But really quick, I wanted to bring up this point because I just love this weekend in Las Vegas. It really showcases how this is like the center of the sports world sometimes. You know, big fight, obviously, Crawford, Canelo at Allegiant on Saturday. And then Las Vegas, the Aces, the hottest team in the WNBA, Sunday. And then on Monday, big Monday night football game, Chargers and the Raiders. So this 3-day stretch here in Vegas, Vegas is the center of the sports world again.
Arash, I got a minute left, and we usually don't do a whole lot of college football in our spots, but I don't know if tonight's a gigantic game. It would be a bad loss for UCLA. Are you feeling like Deshaun Foster is in some trouble?
I think so. I think if they lose this game, I talked to a friend over there. Like when I say he's on the hot seat, I don't necessarily think he's going to lose his job this early, but he's not long for that position, and I think everyone in Vegas got a view of that firsthand, where this was like a really bad situation, where they have not looked good in the loss to Utah, the loss to UNLV, and certainly if they lose at home in front of a national crowd to New Mexico, I don't see how Deshaun Foster survives this season.
He's down on Radio Row giving us coverage on the scene of the Canelo-Crawford fight, which goes down tomorrow over at Allegiant Stadium. Arash Markazi at Sporting Trib, the CEO of the Sporting Tribune. Arash, we appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon. Bye.
Arash Markazi with Cofield and Company. 10-0. Houston's on top of Colorado. We'll get you more college football updates. Some NFL picks on the way, though, for week number 2 with Cofield and Company live here at the Golden Circle Sports Bar on a Friday night.
Live from the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
NFL picks, leans, likes, stayaways, maybe some total plays coming up in just a couple minutes. We're also going to get more picks and handicapping info. A lot of really good info is what I expect out of Scott Seidenberg, who's coming up from VSiN at 12:30 the game in just a couple minutes. Willie... Houston is on top of Colorado. It's approaching the end of the first quarter. It's 10-0. You remember that Houston program was the one that UNLV went down and beat up on in last year's. Was that the home opener? I don't know. I can't remember. But they got a win. It's a much different team now with a much better quarterback in Connor Wigman. So far in the first quarter, as it comes to a close, Cougars and Willie Fritz, 183 total yards to 45. Colorado's a mess right now, so we'll see if they can bounce back. But not looking good.
Yeah, I liked Houston in this one too. I think Colorado's going to be lucky to get into the end zone in this game, to be quite honest with you. I think that they got some issues. Let's just put it that way. It's a complete knock on them. It has nothing to do with like how good Houston is. I just think that this is a good spot for them to score a conference win. I just think Colorado's going to have some problems in finding some rhythm on the offensive end this season, or at least the first part.
Warren Sapp, you know, is a coach on Colorado. His defensive line tonight stinks. They've given up 92 alone. That'd be great if the Cougars go for 368 on the ground. My God. It's early, though. It's 10-0. Second quarter adjustments coming up. All right, NFL week 2. Let's get to it. Start out with some Pats-Dolphins action. I think I am going to put the Dolphins on my 5-team card for contest. 1.5, although, you know, I've had people tell me, don't rely on bad teams to win contests. Right now the Dolphins are a bad team, but I will not overreact to week 1. I think they will rally around all the public beatdown they got after getting smashed last week by the Colts. What do you want to do with it?
Yeah, word of the week, overreaction. I think out of the two teams, I think Miami is much better than what we saw last week than New England is. They're you know, the potential of being much better than we saw against the Raiders. I don't think that being blown out by the Colts is indicative of what this team is. I think Tua is going to come out with a chip on his shoulder. The only thing I will say about the Patriots for teaser bettors, it might be a good spot like where you play the Dolphins, but you tease the Patriots up. You can even tease both sides or play Patriots on your teasers, but I like the Dolphins to win this one.
Are the Jaguars much better this year? Bengals are 3. It's 125, but the Bengals are 3 at home against Jacks.
Yeah, I you know, it's a weird one, and there's something about this. The line's dipped. Jags with a convincing 26-10 win over the Panthers. I like the dog in this one. There's something that's telling me that, you know, we saw last year the Bengals took a while to get going under Zach Taylor. It's become sort of a tradition. And I expect them to sort of let the lesser teams stick around and challenge them. And even if they pull this one out, I have to wonder if Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne is going to keep this one close and it comes down to a field goal. I'm going to take it, but I want to make sure I get the 3.5.
What will you do with your Ravens laying a big number here? Certainly they're going to be, you know, fired up, frustrated after last week's embarrassment. They played such a good game for 3.5 quarters and fell apart in the final 4 minutes. 11.5, Baltimore or Cleveland?
Yeah, Cleveland going on the road. I think right now the focus for Baltimore is to just get the win. But I don't think that Cleveland is anything like Buffalo's offense. But what I do think is that they're going to be able to pick things out in game film that'll keep them within single digits. I mean, Baltimore could win this one 31-21, you look at it like a 10-point. You know, they'll call it a rout because it's a double digit win, but they don't cover the 11.5. If I'm going to play this one, I'm probably going to take the dog, but I think Baltimore bounces back and wins.
88% of the cash, 90% of the tickets on the Cowboys, yet the numbers come down 0.5 point. Giants are getting 5.5 in Dallas, and, you know, both teams are feeling pretty bad about the way they open the season. What do you say?
I like the Dallas Cowboys. This has nothing to do with being my boys. This is one where there's no overreaction. I think the Giants are as bad as we saw against the Commanders. They lose 21-6. Giants fans already calling for Jackson Dart. And I just don't know if, you know, I mean, how many years are we going to, you know, to not blame Brian Daboll? I mean, you know, Danny Dimes is out. So, I mean, you know, and then is Russell Wilson the guy? Who knows? So I think Dallas, I think they played better than expected. And we talked about this, no moral victories, but I'm fine with the way they lost to the Philadelphia Eagles on opening night, in the fact that they weren't supposed to win, but I thought that they did better than was expected. I think this one being at home, they're going to come out smoking, and I think they win this one handily.
I think the Titans are going to struggle for much of this season at the beginning until Cam Ward gets acclimated and the offensive line picks it up a little bit. That was kind of a mix of Ward, the line, struggling, and also the Broncos' defense is awesome. Rams are on the road, 5.5. I think I'll lay it. I never do that. It's probably a stay away for me, but if I were going to do it, it's L.A.
Yeah, same here. You know, I saw good things from Cam Ward, 12 of 28, 112 yards. Didn't get the offense into the end zone. The wild thing is, against that defense, they did get the cover at +8.5. I just kind of wish that they had something to build on. But with this, I think that the Rams are the play. If you're going to play this one, it's that precarious 5-point favorite on the road that you kind of stay away from. It's a weird number that you kind of look at and go, why isn't it 6 or 7? Oh, man, but it's not 4, so maybe they should win. It's a weird number. If you're going to play, you'll play the Rams. Otherwise, stay away.
Bills on the road, 6 against the Jets.
So here's a weird one, Steve, with the way that the Jets played, a chip on the shoulder with this team. Justin Fields, I mean, they're right there with it. We talked about it earlier. They probably should have won that game. If I'm going to do anything with this game, Bills coming in riding high off the win over Baltimore. Same thing I said earlier about seeing holes in the defense. The same way that Cleveland will be able to see what the Ravens did. I think the Jets will be able to study that. It's a division game, which is always dangerous in the AFC East. If anything, I'm going to tease the Bills down and just lay a half and throw them on a teaser.
Bears and Lions. Griff, I think we'll skip the bite we had because we're hustling along here. Lions are up to 6.5 now against Chi-Town.
I'm taking the dog, point blank. I think that there's problems with Detroit. I think it was proven. Yes, Green Bay has improved. Yes, that defense is probably for real. But at the same token, Detroit couldn't get anything going. That's scary. And let's give Ben Johnson his respect. He knows that team, right? He built that offense. He knows how he practiced every single day against that that team. So he's going to know what to do. And I think Chicago is really pissed off after Monday night. So I like the Bears plus the points. I think it's going to be close.
Man, this one doesn't make sense. And maybe I'm too high on the Steelers. Pittsburgh minus -3 against the Seahawks.
Yeah, advanced line on the game with Steelers 2.5. It jumps a little bit. Steelers with that 34-32 win at the Jets. Seahawks 17-13 home loss against the 49ers. Now they travel. If I'm playing this one, I'm probably taking Mike Tomlin and the boys. Gotta like Aaron Rodgers at home for this one, but I'm most likely would leave it alone. But I think the play has to be on the home team.
Niners have to go with Mac Jones, -3 at the Saints.
We talked about it earlier, Steve. I mean, if there has been one big overreaction, yes, Mac Jones isn't Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy out for 3 to 5 weeks, but this is why you prepare and have a guy like Mac Jones in the waiting in the wings. All training camp, I'd be the first one in line saying it. The Saints are the worst team in the NFL. They have the worst quarterback room. Spencer Rattler is your guy. I'd rather have Mac Jones. If Mac Jones, let's put it this way, if Mac Jones was in New Orleans, he'd be their QB. So I like the 49ers. I think it's a huge overreaction, and I think the 49ers win this game.
I'm not laying 7 with the Cardinals. Do I want to play the Panthers plus 7? No, but if I had to, I would.
Same. Ditto. I'm not laying that big of a number with Kyler Murray and the Cardinals. Panthers are going to, you know, they're traveling, but I think that they, Cardinals, they didn't dominate the New Orleans Saints. They outgained them 315 to 276. They hold on for a 20-13 victory. You heard what I just said about the Saints. So how impressive was the win? If you're going to play this game, I think it's a good spot to take the dog. At plus 6.5, try to buy the hook, maybe go up to 7. Or if you want to use the Panthers on a teaser. But I like the dog just as it is.
Broncos are now 1 at the Colts. This is the kind of game that's a real litmus test if this is a new Daniel Jones, because he can be a turnover machine, and against this defense, it could get real, real bad. Colts are getting 1.
If it's in Denver, I'm probably laying it, but the fact that it's in Indianapolis, you know, it's not a bad look at it. I have to wonder how many survivor players are going to play Denver. Is it a trap game is where I'm looking at, and I'm wondering if they kind of come in a little underestimating Indianapolis and sort of, I don't know. It's a scary game. I wouldn't play it personally, but I'd be very wary of this dog.
90 seconds, best game of the day, Eagles and Chiefs. This number's been going kind of back and forth. Eagles are 1 right now in KC.
Yeah, regardless, it's a Super Bowl rematch. The Chiefs have, you know, pride to coming off the season-opening loss. And not to mention losing to the Eagles very badly in the Super Bowl. I'm going to give me the dog in this one. It's Pat Mahomes and Andy Reid. I mean, you know, they're going to want revenge. And, hey, did Dallas play better than was expected? Or did Philly not do what they were supposed to do? So give me the dog with Kansas City.
Are the Vikings what they were on Monday night in the first half or the second half? Because if they're the second half team, then they should take care of the Falcons pretty easily, and that's why the line's not – there's some doubt. That's why the line's not a touchdown. It's 3.5 Vikes.
I think the offense is what it was in the second half, but I also think the defense is what it was in the first half. And let's not forget, it's Michael Penix's team finally. I like the Falcons plus the points as long as you're getting that half point. I think it comes down to the end, and it's one of those games where, you know, Sunday Night Football, another great primetime thriller, and it could come down to – you know, a last-second field goal.
Make sure you get signed up for one of those William Hill mobile sports accounts. You get right now, if you're a new owner of an app or the app, you can earn up to a $250 bonus bet if you're placing your first qualifying wager. The William Hill Nevada mobile sports app allows you to bet on the go from the iPhone, the iPad, the Android. Sign up today, and you're never going to miss another bet. And then they've got a massive wagering menu, same-game parlays, early cash, live in-play wagering on all major sports. It's the William Hill, Nevada mobile sports account. So I've been talking so much about overreaction, and week 2 is the best time to bet, but I wanted to bring someone in who's actually done the research. So on the way back, we're going to hear from a dude from VSiN and 1230 The Game, who did a lot of research on what really happens in week 2 and is there an overreaction with the numbers and the betting. Scott Seidenberg is on the way.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Rolling out on this Friday, we've been talking betting all show long, like we always do on a Football Friday, and Scott Seidenberg, VSIN, and 12:30 of the game is up with us. Scott, let's start with a little college football here. Miami and South Florida, is USF for real?
Can they do it 3 weeks in a row? I mean, this is unprecedented stuff, right? You know, maybe they're just that good. Maybe we didn't know. Maybe they're just that good. Or maybe this is, I don't want to call it smoke and mirrors, but, you know, Florida didn't look good. Florida didn't convert in the red zone. South Florida has played well. I'm not going to take anything away from South Florida's performances here, but now a third consecutive week over a ranked team. Miami's the edge is clear on the front seven on defense and in their offensive line. So I have no interest in betting this game. This is a fascinating stay away and watch for me, but I don't think any result surprises me here. Like if South Florida covers, I'm like, then it kind of just shores up our early opinions. Like, hey, you know what? Maybe this team actually is pretty decent this year. And we should watch out for them in that conference. And if Miami blows them out, well, it's just going to be like, well, yeah, there was a clear talent mismatch. And South Florida is the team that we all thought they were coming into the season. So I'm not going to take anything away from South Florida. I just have no interest in betting this game.
Is LSU a potential superpower this year? Can they just maul Florida?
They have the talent to do it, right? They have the quarterback who's likely the number one overall pick in the draft. We haven't seen him, though, throw the ball all over the field yet. We haven't seen these talented playmakers open up the field for LSU. This might be the time to do it. So Florida, their weakness so far this year has been their pass coverage. They're 107th in defensive success defending the pass. If you look at their PFF grades, Pro Football Focus, where they do a great job rating players and their position groups, they rank 60th in coverage, 75th in pass rush. If there was ever a time for Garrett Nussmeier and the LSU offense to throw all over the field, this is it. And then on the other side, Florida's offensive line is not doing them any favors. I mean, yeah, you could say, all right, is DJ Lagway holding onto the ball too much? I don't know, but they've already allowed 18 tackles for loss in their first two games. I think LSU's defensive front's going to get after it. There's going to be plenty of sacks. There's going to be plenty of quick getaway throws. Might be a turnover or two. I think LSU rolls here, and maybe it's more of an indictment about what we've seen from Florida so far. But to me, this feels like a spot where LSU puts up a big number.
Scott Seidenberg on Cofield & Company. Last college spot, A&M plus 6.5 against Notre Dame feels too big to me.
It does, but let's keep in mind the game's in South Bend, right? And we saw Notre Dame go into College Station last year and just run all over A&M. And that was the first game of the year. Certainly, it was a statement victory. But when I say run all over, like they ran all over. And something that we didn't see from Notre Dame in the first week against Miami was the dedication to the run. They opened the game with just pass, 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 and maybe that was trying to get CJ Carr into rhythm, or maybe they were saving Jeremiah Love for later in the game to kind of play that whole, hey, we're going to wear you down in the second half, but the game got away from them and they were trailing the whole time. I think that they're going to put a renewed focus on the run here against Texas A&M. And if you're looking at a player prop betting perspective, I wouldn't look at Jeremiah Love. I'd look at Jadarian Price, because I think both of these running backs are going to have a tremendous day against Texas A&M, just like they did last year. I think Notre Dame is going to put an emphasis on the run. And what CJ Carr showed in that Miami game, I mean, he's not Riley Leonard, right? But he looked pretty good running the football. Like, the designed runs are not going away for Notre Dame for the quarterback. So I do think we'll see CJ Carr run. I think we'll see Love run, and Price certainly. And one other note, Marcus Freeman in his career, 7-1 straight up after a loss. The only time he's lost back-to-back football games was his very first two football games, head coach of Notre Dame. They actually lost the first three games that year. But he is 7-1 after a loss in his career as a head coach at Notre Dame. So I think Notre Dame wins here at home, and I think they run all over A&M.
On ESPN Las Vegas. Scott, tell people about the work you're doing on the college football front with BetUS.
Yeah, every Tuesday and Wednesday, 1 o'clock Eastern time, live stream on the BetUS TV college football YouTube channel. We host the college football show of myself, Kyle Hunter, and Joshua Nunn, two great college football handicappers, each and every Tuesday and Wednesday. And we welcome the live chats and the community, the interaction. We give out the best bets as well. So we do two episodes a week, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, for BetUS TV.
I love betting week two in the NFL. I think the overreactions are crazy, but is that a figment of my imagination, or are there numbers that actually back that up, that overreactions do happen?
So I did so much work on this, Steve, on the overreactions. It's unbelievable. And I wrote about this on my website, Better Day, B-E-T-T-O-R-D-A-Y, betterday.com. That's the name of my podcast as well. If you look at 1-0 teams in week number one, now my data points, I like to go back. I know a lot of people do trends, and there's a lot of great people in Vegas that do a lot of trends. I don't care about what happened since 2012. I don't care about that. I care about what has happened since 2021. Because let's be honest, the world changed after COVID. We know that. But also the NFL changed. Starting in the 2021 season, we went to a 17-game regular season and a three-week preseason. Everything changed. The way that you practice, the way that you prepare. So many things that I think that's the new era of NFL football started with the 2021 season. So I looked at 1-0 teams. If you win your game in week number one and then you're favored in week number two since the start of the 2021 season, you are just 11-21-3 against the spread in week number two. You're failing to cover by 2.2 points per game. When they are home favorites, this is crazy, 5-15-1 against the spread in week number two. The lines are inflated because of what people saw in week number one. So a couple of things that, you know, the home favorites you might want to fade here. The Vikings, the Cardinals, the Steelers, the Bengals, the Packers. Those are 1-0 home favorites that you might want to fade. Now let's take a look at some other scenarios here because this is unbelievable to me. The blowout reactions. If you lost your game by double digits, this is it. You lost your game. You got beat by double digits. Obviously, the market's down on you. Everybody thinks that you stink. You are 16-9-2 ATS in week number two. So it's and when you are a dog in week number two because of that, 11-5-1 against the spread in week number two, an overreaction. If you win your game by double digits and then you are a favorite in week number two, you are 5-11 against the spread. Overreactions to week number one. Now, this is my favorite overreaction. I call this the opinion change. Steve, think about this. If you covered your game in week number one as an underdog, and then all of a sudden you are a favorite now in week number two, that's clearly the market changing an opinion on you, right? Mm-hmm. Because you covered in week number one as a dog. Now we're going to list you as a favorite in week number two. Since 2021, those teams are 3-11 against the spread in those week two games. 3-11. They're failing to cover by 7.5 points per game. Now, how about when those teams win outright as a dog in week number one and then their favorite in week number two? Those are great, right? We love that. 3-8 against the spread. That's part of that 3-11 trend. It's part of that 3-11 trend. They're 3-8. But if you're favored by more than a field goal in week number two, so you won your game outright as a dog in week number one. Everyone loves you now. Now you're a favorite by over a field goal in week number two. 1-6 against the spread, failing to cover by almost 10 points per game. It's a recency bias that we have to fade here. There's too much of an overreaction to week number one. And so the fade teams that I'm looking at that I want to bet against this week, Cowboys, Bills, Vikings, and Chargers. These are teams, and think about it, the Bills, Vikings, and Chargers all had outright wins. I want to go against those teams here in week number two. So it might be ugly. You might have to hold your nose. But I like the Giants against the Cowboys. I like the Jets against the Bills. I'm taking the Falcons against the Vikings. I'm taking the Raiders against the Chargers. I mean, those are probably my four best bets for this week. I'm going to fade all of this recency bias that everyone's all excited about the teams that came away with these big wins or these big covers in week number one, and I'm going to bet on the dogs in these games.
Let's go deep diving on three of those that you mentioned. Giants plus 6 against the Cowboys.
Again, could the Giants have looked worse in that game? No.
They're terrible. They've got to switch quarterbacks. It's one game, everyone.
Exactly. Exactly. And here's the thing. I know we always like to say we know more than these NFL coaches, right? No, we don't. No, we don't. With all due respect, we don't know more than the NFL. You do not know football better than Brian Daboll. I'm sorry. And Brian Daboll makes a living coaching football. If he loses football games, he is unemployed. If he thinks and believes that Russell Wilson can win him football games, he's going to play Russell Wilson. If he thinks Jackson Dart gives him a better chance to win football games, and eventually, guess what? He might. That's the time when Jackson Dart's going to start. If Brian Daboll believed that in week number two against the Dallas Cowboys that Jackson Dart gave him a better chance to win this football game, Jackson Dart will be the quarterback for this game against the Dallas Cowboys, not Russell Wilson. Let's calm down, okay? The Giants, that game, it got away from them late. They allowed that long 40-yard touchdown. This was a closer game. This was a 1-2 possession game for the majority of this football game. The Giants just couldn't cash in. Giants got down to the goal line, first and goal at the 3-yard line. They came away with 0 points. Like, there were opportunities in that game. And so I think it was a lot closer than people thought. And the Cowboys, they're likely going to be without Daron Bland this week. That's going to be a big hurt for their defense. I certainly didn't like what happened, you know, losing Micah Parsons. And how fluky was that game? I mean, let's be honest. If yeah. Jalen Carter plays, do the Cowboys, do they have success? It was the first time in the last 3 years that the Eagles allowed two rushing touchdowns in the same game in between the tackles. Oh, you think? Because they're missing the best defensive tackle in the NFL. So, you know, like, I'm not in love with the Cowboys. I think it's a down year for them. I'm not saying that I'm, like, overly in love with the New York Giants. I just think there's a market overreaction here. I like the Giants plus the points.
Last 2 minutes, so the other two games you mentioned, give me the positives on the Jets side or negatives with the Bills.
Well, I'll ask you this question because I honestly don't know the answer. I've been trying to ask everybody this. Are the Jets good? Like, are they good?
I don't know. I think the Steelers' defense is probably pretty decent. I think the Jets can run it, and right now the Bills didn't look like they can stop the run.
Justin Fields actually looked good. This offense looked good. Like, it's crazy. They did. The offense looked good. Think about how that game swung. If Xavier Gibson doesn't fumble the kickoff, the Jets win that football game. Because Aaron Rodgers threw a touchdown pass, ensuing kickoff, Jets fumble. 2 plays later, Steelers score another touchdown, right? That completely changed the entire game. If he doesn't fumble there, the Jets probably march down the field and score. They didn't punt at all in the first half. I think this Jets team is better than we think. Now, I don't think they're a playoff team, but they're going to put up fights. And to me, it's a fade of the Bills after the, you know, come from behind win and everybody's excited over them. I was just looking at this, speaking of trends here. If you came back from double digits in week number one to win that football game, and now you're a week two favorite, those teams are 0-3 against the spread in week number two. And you're not covering by 2 touchdowns. So bad sign for both the Bills and the Vikings. Interesting stuff there. Both come from behind wins. Yeah, it's a fade of me, and I'm going to back the Jets here. I don't know if they win this game outright, but they'll keep it within a touchdown.
Give me the positives on Atlanta plus 3.5.
Same thing for me here is fading the Vikings off the come from behind win. J.J. McCarthy was incredible in the second half, but that shouldn't ignore what we saw in the first half, which was a bad performance. The pick six was a throw that an NFL quarterback should never make. He has to be better at making decisions. How much of that second half comeback was just JJ being in the flow of the game? And maybe that's what Kevin O'Connell has to do. Kevin O'Connell is one of the best quarterback coaches and one of the best head coaches that we have in this league. So maybe just letting his guy cut loose is how they're going to succeed. But when he was trying to play on script in the first half, it didn't go well for him. So I'm very curious to see what happens. I can't lay over a field goal here with Minnesota because of that. And for the Falcons, they could have very easily won that game. I think everyone's opinions change of them. If Younghoe Koo makes a field goal and they go on to win that game in overtime, if they're coming off a win against the Bucs, what are we saying about Michael Penix? What are we saying about this team? Obviously, there's a lot of recency biases that we talked about a lot here in week number two. So I'm going to fade that once again and go with the road Falcons.
Great spot. Scott Seidenberg with us from the Better Day podcast, also on VSiN. Tell the Vegas audience they can hear you on 12:30, the game, or on VSiN. What time you're on Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, every Saturday night, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific time. Loads full of NFL preview content, recapping the day in college football. And then every Sunday evening, 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific time, live betting during the Sunday night football game. So our first hour is kind of that witching hour, as Scott Hansen would say, and then we get into the preview of the Sunday night game, and then it's all live betting during the first half and going into halftime of that Sunday night football game. So that's me on VSiN every Saturday and Sunday.
That was great. Thank you so much.
Anytime.
There he is, Scott Seidenberg, VSiN and 12:30 the game and the Better Day podcast. Thanks to Golden Circle and Treasure Island for hosting the show today. Tomorrow, remember, Throw the Flag starts right here at Treasure Island at 9 o'clock. ESPN Las Vegas breaking down the early games, full college football preview, 9A to 11A. You can get breakfast, you can get lunch, whatever you want here at the Golden Circle Sports Bar. We'll see you tomorrow.